We are glad to present your speaker, Don Blackwell.
The elders have asked me to preach a special sermon today on the subject of reverence, and especially as it relates to our worship. And so I want to begin this morning by reading Psalm 89 in verse 7. You may still be open there from the scripture reading. It says, God is greatly to be feared in the assembly of the saints, and is to be had in reverence of all of them that are about Him. Now, the text says God is greatly to be feared. The word feared here is from the Greek word, or the Hebrew word, aratz. Definition number one of this Hebrew word says, this word means to tremble, to dread, to fear, to oppress, to prevail, to break, to be terrified, or to cause to tremble. Another one of the definitions says, to regard or treat with awe, to regard or treat as awe-full. That is, when we come into the presence of God, He is to be feared. We are to be trembled. We are to regard Him with awe. Now, this verse goes on to say that God is to be held in reverence among the saints. This is from the Hebrew word yare. This word means to fear, to revere, to be afraid. Another one of the definitions says to fear, to reverence, to honor, or to respect. And so when we put this together, what we get is that in the assembly of the saints, we should have trembling. We should have fear. There should be a sense of awe when we come into the presence of God. It makes me think about Exodus chapter 3 as Moses approaches the burning bush and God stops him and says, take your shoes off. You are on holy ground. He said, you're going to have to behave differently. You're going to have to dress differently as you come into the presence of God. It makes me think about Exodus chapter 19 as the children of Israel have just come out of the land of Egypt. And they're at the foot of Mount Sinai. And you remember the thunder was rumbling on the mountain. And the people were fearful. They were in awe at the presence of God in this mountain. And it's very interesting in that particular text. In Exodus 19 and verse 9, the Lord said to Moses, Lo, I will come unto thee in a thick cloud, that the people may hear thee when I speak, and they may believe forever. But listen to the next verse, verse 10. And the Lord said unto Moses, go unto this people, and sanctify them today and tomorrow, and have them wash their clothes. Now that's interesting. Have them wash their clothes and be ready on the third day, for on the third day the Lord will come down in the sight of all of the people upon Mount Sinai. The Lord said, before I come into the sight of all of the people, there are some things I want you to do. Number one, I want all the people to be sanctified. And number two, I want you to have the people wash their clothes. He said something special has to take place before you come into the presence of God. This is not ordinary behavior. God was going to come into their sight. This is unique. It's special. I think about Revelation chapter 4 and verse 10, where the Bible speaks about the 24 elders falling down before the throne of God and casting their crowns before Him and saying, Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power. Ladies and gentlemen, when I read in the Bible about people coming into the presence of God, the honor that they give Him, the respect that they express to Him, when I read about these things, the trembling, the awe, it makes me think that many times we have fallen down on the job. Many times we don't treat God as something special, someone to be feared and someone who brings awe, but many times we treat God as ordinary. The Bible says God is greatly to be feared in the assembly of the saints and to be had in reverence of all of them that are about Him. Now this morning we want to talk about reverence, particularly as it relates to our clothing, how we dress for worship. I want to make 4 points in the lesson this morning. Number one, the first point is our clothing communicates something to God. Number two, our clothing communicates something to other people. Number three, our clothing communicates something to us, to ourselves. And then finally, number four, I want to talk about some objections that are sometimes made. Now, at the end of the sermon this morning, the elders are going to get up and make some announcements with regard to this particular subject. Point number one this morning is this. Our clothing communicates something to God. Brethren, our clothes do matter to God when we come to worship. I would ask this question. If our clothes do not matter to God, then why did God tell Moses, take off your shoes? You're on holy ground. If our clothes don't matter, what was the point of that? If our clothes don't matter to God, why did God tell Moses, when I come into the presence of the people, have them wash their clothes? The clothes don't matter. Why did He say that? And suppose when God told Moses that, suppose that one of the children of Israel had said, you know, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to wash my clothes. My clothes are more comfortable after I've been wearing them for 2 or 3 days. And besides having to wash them, that would be inconvenient. And I'm not going to do it. What if He had said that? Friends, I want to suggest to you, if He had said that, it would have communicated something to God. What would it have communicated? It would have said to God, you are not worthy. It would have said to Him, my comfort and my convenience is more important to me than what you would have me to do, and I don't count you worthy of doing it. In Exodus chapter 39 and in Leviticus chapter 16, there's a description there of the priest garments. And if you go and read it in minute detail, he describes how the priest, particularly the high priest, was to dress when he comes into the presence of God. Tremendous effort went into preparing the high priest to go into God's presence. I would ask the question, why is there such minute detail given on how the high priest was to dress if clothes don't matter to God? There's a very interesting passage in 1 Chronicles chapter 15. This is right after the Ark of the Covenant had been taken by the Philistines. And David had gone and he tried to bring the Ark home. And you remember the incident that happened where Uzzah touched the Ark. And so they ended up leaving the Ark in the house of Obededom for about 3 months. And after about 3 months, David says, let's go again and try to get the Ark. And so on this second attempt, I want you to listen to what the text says in 1 Chronicles 15:25. The text says, so David and the elders of Israel and the captains over thousands went to bring up the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord out of the house of Obededom with joy. And it came to pass, when God helped the Levites that bear the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, that they offered 7 bullocks and 7 rams, and David was clothed with a robe of fine linen. Now that last verse is interesting to me. Why is that there? Why are we told they went to get the Ark and they were sacrificing and there was joy? And incidentally, David was wearing a robe of fine linen. Is that just an incidental? Is that just a statement just for our curiosity's sake? I don't think so. The point is, David was wearing something that was special because this was not an ordinary occasion. David was dressed appropriately because of what they were doing. They were going to retrieve the Ark of the Covenant. They were going to retrieve the Ark of God. You know, frequently in the Old Testament, the Ark of the Covenant is spoken of as God dwelling between the cherubim. And so when they went to get the Ark of the Covenant, they were going into the presence of God. Now, was there a verse somewhere that said, when you go to get the Ark of the Covenant, you have to dress a special way? There wasn't a verse like that. There was no commandment in the Old Testament law. Now, of course, there was special clothing for the priests that they wore when they engaged in worship. But I can only surmise that David dressed this way, not based on a particular passage, but based on a principle of reverence. He was going to get the Ark of God. He would not do that without proper respect. Brethren, I want to suggest to you that David dressing this way supports the point that we're making, and that is the clothing that we wear communicates something to God. And David wanted to be as reverent and respectful as he could possibly be when he went to get the Ark of the Covenant. Number two, I want to suggest to you that our clothing communicates something to other people. You know, in the book of Esther, you might remember that when the decree was made that all the Jews were going to be killed, the first thing that Mordecai did was he changed his clothes. Esther chapter 4 and verse 1 says that he put on sackcloth and ashes and he went and sat in the middle of the city. Now, why did he do that? Because he was grieving. And when Esther heard about it, she sent a change of clothes and said, tell him to change clothes. You see, his clothing had communicated something to her. He was grieving. And you know, we understand this. We understand that clothing communicates something. We understand it even today when we go to a wedding. When we go to a funeral, we want to communicate respect. And so generally, men will wear a shirt and a tie. Why do we do that? Because we want to communicate respect. Sometimes we'll even wear a coat if it's very formal, depending on how respectful the occasion is. If we're going to meet a dignitary or the governor, I'm going to meet the president of the United States, I would put on my suit. Why do I do that? because I understand that in our society, in the culture in which we live, the way we dress communicates something to other people, and this is the way that the suit, the shirt, the tie, it represents a respectful attitude. I understand that if I'm going to go meet the President of the United States, I don't wear my tennis shoes and my flip-flops or a t-shirt, because that would communicate something insulting. There is a man by the name of John T. Malloy. He is the author of a very popular book called Dress for Success. You've probably heard of it. While Mr. Malloy was writing his book, he did some very interesting experiments. One of the experiments that he did was to walk around the Port Authority bus terminal and in Grand Central Station in New York City. And what he did was he would stop people and he would say to them, "Sir, I am terribly embarrassed, but I left my wallet at home, and I need 75 cents so that I can catch a bus to get home." He did this for 2 hours during rush hour. Now, during the first hour, he wore a suit, but he did not wear a tie. During the second hour, he wore the exact same suit, but he put on a necktie. What he found, in the first hour, he was given $7.23. During the second hour, he was given $26, and someone even offered to buy him a newspaper. Now, why did he make nearly four times as much money when he put on a tie? This is what he said. He said the tie is a symbol of respectability and responsibility. It communicates, now that's his word and that's the word we're talking about. He said the tie communicates to other people who you are, or reinforces or detracts from their conception of who you should be. Now, after conducting literally thousands of studies and experiments over a period of years, Mr. Malloy concluded that what a person wears is directly related to his success in life. Now, of course, he's writing from a business perspective, but the point that he makes is our clothes say something about us. One man wrote this. He said, "Your clothes openly reveal your attitudes. Your attitudes toward yourself, self-esteem, toward others, relationships, toward your work, its importance, and toward your God, reverence or lack of reverence toward Him. Immodest clothing is a dead giveaway of a person with loose morals. What you wear indicates the importance that you attach to what you are doing." Now, I read another article that was very interesting. Again, it's from the secular world, but I think it makes the point that what we wear communicates something to other people. This is an article from the Cincinnati Inquirer. The article is entitled, "Got a Job Interview? Then Ditch the Flip-Flops." Very interesting. The title of it catches your attention. In the article, it talks about a man named Joseph Rosenfeld. He is an image consultant based in San Jose, California. He said, "There is something that is definitely happening with the younger generation now. There's a lot of accept me now, accept me for who and what I am, and give me whatever I want right now." He said that's the attitude of the younger generation. Now, what does that have to do about dressing for a job interview? Keep listening. Jennifer Loyless said this. She said, "We had job applicants come in with bare midriffs or flip-flops." She said, "This does not give us the impression that they respect the work that we do." She said, "When they come in dressed like that, in a slack way, they're wearing flip-flops to a job interview, what that says to us is they don't respect our work." The article goes on to say, "Graduates should never delude themselves into thinking that grades trump attitude. Once you learn the company's dress code, dress one step above it." Now, this is very fascinating to me, because here are people in the secular world who are saying this very casual dress communicates to us a lack of respect. And it's very interesting that they said that they interpret this casual dress as saying, "You accept me as I am" attitude. They said that's what it says to us. And it's very fascinating. They mention flip-flops as something that's disrespectful in the world. These are people in the world that are saying this. You know, I have traveled around to different congregations, and when I go into a worship service, the way that people are dressed immediately communicates something to me about their attitudes. It immediately says something to me about the eldership there. You know, growing up here at North Charleston, whenever the youth group would travel, we had a dress code. And I'm not just talking about modesty issues, because we certainly want to have that. But the dress code that we had was that boys were to wear nice shirts and slacks, and the girls were to wear dresses or skirts when we were traveling. Very frequently when we would stop to eat or we would stop somewhere in public, Big Al and Ferris would receive compliments from people. They would see us, and it sent a message to them about our youth group, and it was a good message. Brethren, the Bible sustains the fact that what goes on our outside reveals something about our inside. Proverbs 4:23 says, "Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life." Now, what does that mean? The issues of life, the things going on in my life, the things that you see me participating in have to do with what's going on the inside of me. Matthew 12:35 says, "A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth good things. An evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth evil things." Again, what he's saying is the outside communicates something about the inside. 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 10 says that Christian women, really all women, but it says that Christian women are to dress like women professing godliness. What does that mean? It means if in your heart you desire to be godly, then dress like it. Let your outside reflect your inside. Let your outside reflect your heart. And you know, my clothes might say, I respect. My clothes might say, I don't care. My clothes might say, I'm lazy. My clothes might say, I'm rebellious. My clothes might say a lot of other things. And incidentally, this is the reason that I discourage Christians from wearing nose rings and body art and things like that. Not because there's a verse in the Bible that says thou shalt not wear nose rings, but because the way we appear on the outside communicates something. And these things communicate a message that generally the world interprets not as the way I want to be interpreted as a Christian. The way I dress communicates something to God. The way I dress communicates something to other people. And here's number three. The way that I dress communicates something to me, to myself. Now you might think, well, that's a strange point. But the point that I'm making is this. The way that I dress affects me. It affects my mindset. Again, John T. Malloy found, in doing these studies, he found that offices that adopt dress codes experienced more punctuality, more productivity, and more initiative from employees. Now, why is that? Why when they adopted a dress code, would people be more punctual? Why when they adopted a dress code, would there be better productivity? Why when they adopted a dress code, would there be more initiative? I think it's because the way that we dress affects our mindset. Somebody was telling me, a friend of mine was telling me the other day, that you've probably heard of this thing that a lot of companies have done where they have casual Fridays. He said that a lot of companies have stopped doing that, and the reason he told me was very interesting. He said because when they had this day where people dressed sloppy, their work was sloppy. I thought, that is very interesting. I got to wondering if he was right about that. You know, people say things and hear things, and so I did a little research on this. I got on the internet and started searching for this, and I went to careerknowhows.com. And I found an article there entitled Casual Fridays on the Way Out. Listen to the excerpt from this article. It's talking about casual Fridays and people dressing in a very casual way. The article says, casual dress led to careless dress and careless attitudes. Such negligence is not a good business practice and did not go unnoticed or without consequences. As a result, a growing number of companies are revamping their dress codes entirely. The pendulum is swinging back to the more formal and traditional workplace attire. Dress down day is being replaced with dress up day, and formal Friday is replacing casual Friday. I found that to be absolutely fascinating, that the secular world has discovered that casual dress led to carefree attitudes. Now, what's the point of that? The point is the way I dress affects me. It affects my mindset. And so if the way that I dress matters to God and says something about my respect, if the way that I dress communicates something to other people, it affects my mindset and my mentality, then certainly when I come to worship, I want to dress in a way that reflects a heart of reverence to God. I want to dress in a way that tells other people I'm serious about what I'm doing. I respect the Creator of the universe. I'm coming before Him in awe. And that says to me, I'm serious about this. The secular world says flip-flops ain't it. Flip-flops is not the way to do it. And you know, we know how to do it. We know how to dress reverently. Sometimes we think, well, nobody's going to tell me how. Nobody has to tell us how. We know how. We know how to dress when we go to a wedding. We know how to dress when we go to a funeral. We know. Now, I want to talk about some objections that are sometimes made to dressing up for worship services. As you know, sometimes people get offended at things like this. Sometimes people don't want to dress up for services, and they've got all sorts of reasons. I want to look at some of these objections. Number one, sometimes people will say, it's too hot. Sometimes men will object to wearing a shirt and tie because they say, well, it's too hot. You know, that's not true at North Charleston. Generally, it's set at 69 degrees in here. And I see women wearing blankets and different things in the worship services. It's not too hot to wear a shirt and tie. Sometimes people say, well, you know, there are people who can't afford it. Well, you know, first, in our country, I think it would be rare to find a person who really cannot afford to buy a shirt and tie. You know, they have shirt and tie combos at Walmart for $17.88. I checked it yesterday. You can go to Goodwill and you can buy a shirt and tie for probably less than $5. I bought some nice looking ties at Goodwill. And if indeed we had somebody who is so bad off they cannot afford that, the church would be glad to help them. It's interesting to me that we can afford blue jeans, but we can't afford a dress shirt. Blue jeans are expensive. But you know, if somebody was so truly poor that they could not afford to dress reverently for the worship, and the church for some reason could not help them, then they do the best they can. And certainly God would smile on that. Number three, sometimes people say, well, it's uncomfortable. I don't want to be uncomfortable. I certainly don't deny that wearing a necktie is uncomfortable. But you know, sacrificing to God involves sacrifice. It's not about my personal comfort. If you read Exodus 39 and you read the description of the priest's garments, that sounds extremely uncomfortable to me. But you know, that didn't change the fact that God expected them to wear that. Their comfort was not the primary consideration. In Malachi chapter 1, the people of God had gotten to the point that they counted their service to God as a burden. It was inconvenient, it was uncomfortable, they didn't want to do it. In fact, they used the term weariness. It's a weariness to me to do that. But you know, God did not excuse them on the basis of their discomfort or displeasure. In fact, He found their attitude to be disgusting. In Amos chapter 6, the people of God were consumed with their own comfort. They were laying on beds of ivory, he says. It was all about their comfort. They had no interest in the service to God. But I tell you what, if you go and you read the description of that people who were comfort consumed, it's not a pretty description. You don't want that. Number four, sometimes people will say, well, it's not the clothes that matter. It's what's in the heart that matters. The clothes don't matter as long as your heart's right. What if the priest had said to God, Lord, the clothes don't matter. It's what's in the heart that matters. We're not wearing this. Our hearts are right. We're not wearing it. You see, if they refused to wear it, their hearts really weren't right. If they refused to dress reverently, it indicates their hearts weren't right. What if the people on the base of Mount Sinai had said, you know, we're not going to wash our clothes. The clothes don't matter. It's your heart that matters, and our hearts are right. We're not washing our clothes. Forget it. What if Moses had said to God, I'm not taking my shoes off. Clothes don't matter. My heart's right. You know, we have already observed that clothes are a reflection of the heart. Now, sometimes people want to go to 1 Samuel 16:7, where the Bible says, man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. And they say, that trumps everything. But you know what? They don't understand what that passage is talking about. When he says, man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart, he is not. That passage has nothing to do with how we dress. It has to do with physical characteristics over which we have no control. He is saying God doesn't care about how tall you are. God doesn't care what your skin color is, whether you're white or black. The Lord's not concerned about those things. He's concerned about your heart. He's not saying God doesn't want you to dress reverently when you come into His presence. That has nothing to do with that. Number five, sometimes people will say, well, you know, the Bible doesn't say I have to wear a necktie. You know, as I thought about this, it made me think about last week's sermon and the account of the 10 lepers. Jesus had healed all 10 of these lepers, but only one came back. Now, Jesus condemned the 9 who did not come back. Now, why did He condemn them? My question is this. When did Jesus command these lepers to come back and give thanks? Did He say in the text, Go and show yourself to the priest and you'll be cleansed, and then come back and say thank you. He did not. It is not in the text. It's not there anywhere. My question is, why did he condemn them? Brethren, the reason he condemned them was their failure to come back was a reflection of their heart. He shouldn't have had to tell them, come back and say thank you. If their heart was right, they would have done it. Now, where is the passage that says I have to dress reverently when I come to worship God? I don't have to have a passage. If my heart's right, I'm going to do it. And I know the word necktie is not in the Bible. They didn't wear neckties at that time. But in our society, that is what is considered respectful for a man. We know that because we do it at weddings and funerals and other formal occasions. If we were in a different culture, it might be that reverent for a man meant that he wears a robe and a special type of hat. But to us in the United States, it's a shirt and a tie. And so we wear what's reverent in the society in which we live. Number six, somebody might say, well, you know, sometimes people come straight from work. You know, they might have just gotten off work and they come right in here, and that's true. And when that happens, we're glad that they're here. We're glad they're doing the best they can. If you come to services in your mechanic's uniform or your camouflage BDUs from the military and you have to do that, we're glad you're here. We appreciate the heart of a person who is such that they are going to come to worship even when they haven't had time to change. That's not who we're talking about this morning. That's not who we're considering at all. In fact, the fact they're here in their uniform indicates their heart's right. Number seven, sometimes people will say, well, you know, I'll do it on Sunday morning, but Sunday nights are different. I would say, why? Why are Sunday nights different? Why do we dress differently on Sunday morning than we do on Sunday night? It's just an extension of the Lord's day. I understand that Wednesday night is a different thing. Primarily, the elders have decided in the middle of the week we'll get together and we'll have a Bible study together. We'll just have Christians assemble and we'll study together. I know we offer an invitation at the end for people's convenience, but the reason we come together on Wednesday night is a little bit different. But Sunday morning and Sunday night, they're not different. Number eight, somebody might say, I'm just not going to do it. I refuse. I am not going to do it. I am not going to wear a shirt and tie. You can't make me do it. I would simply say, why not? Why are you not going to do it? Why would someone just defiantly refuse to dress up to worship the Lord? I don't have an answer for that one. I really don't understand it. Is someone just so stubborn that they just refuse? Is someone so prideful? Are they so defiant? Are they so unappreciative? Do they lack awe when they come into the presence of God? Do they not really feel like I am coming into the presence of the Maker of the universe? I don't understand this one. Brethren, when we come together on the Lord's Day to worship, we are coming before the God of the universe. He is the one who spoke me into existence. He is the one who gave the ultimate sacrifice for my soul. He is the one who holds my eternity in His hands. And I tell you what, in light of those things, there is no sacrifice that's too big for me to give. I will go so far as presenting my body as a living sacrifice, Romans 12:1. And wearing a shirt and tie, sure, I'll certainly do that. That's a small thing for me. I began in Psalm 89, and I want to close with Psalm 89. The text says, "For who in the heaven can be compared unto the Lord? Who among the sons of the mighty can be likened unto the Lord? God is greatly to be feared in the assembly of the saints, and to be had in reverence of all them that are about Him."